Right, well, welcome to the archaeology news for this exciting Christmas edition. We've actually got a rather special treat for you. So, before I actually get on with the news, I'd like to introduce you to the Cluckmires. Yes, we have the four hens who you've heard throughout the year. Thank you very much, hens. And they've been practicing very hard. Put a little piece together to take you into Christmas. So if you just give me a second, I've just got to round them up and get them ready. Right, everyone in position. Oh, excellent. Right. High note. Right, okay, thank you very much, girls. That is enough, I think. I hope you enjoyed that little rendition by the Cluckmires. Anyway, where were we? Of course, we are doing the archaeology news. It's nearly Christmas, and this news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources, as well as the fabulous Past Horizons. All the stories have been collected from various sources, by elves, of course, it is Christmas, and to view details in each story, including the Santa, sorry, the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Well, what have we got for you this time? We've got crowds gathering at Stonehenge, surprise, surprise, and Newgrange to mark the winter solstice. It seems that ancient humans actually cared for the sick and disabled. And we've got, well, that's a terrible pun, it's coming. Again, it is Christmas. Oldest wooden architecture has been found in Germany. And we've got prehistoric burial sites unearthed in China, and a surprise, it's a Christmas cracker discovery in Suffolk. There's an uncertain future for the Site Hill Stone Circle up here in Glasgow, and an Israeli archaeologist has unearthed an elite Stone Age society. There's fury at a plan to move a Cornish ancient stone, and I almost want to go, new light on the Nazca Lines. We finish off with a nice little story about archaeology in Oregon. Anyway, let's get on with the news. Well, more than 5,000 people gathered to mark the winter solstice at Stonehenge. The attendance, in fact, was five times the number that turned up for last year's event. More people had been predicted to congregate due to the infamous end of the 5,125-year long count cycle of the Mayan calendar. And if you're listening to this, you'll be happy to hear that all did not go according to plan for the apocalypse. I'm afraid we just moved into the next period. It's about as scary as sort of going, oh no, it's the end of December. What will happen next? I'll tell you what happens next. January. Anyway, Wiltshire police said well over 5,000 people had gathered to watch the sunrise over the giant stones at 8.05 GMT. Only one person was arrested for being drunk and disorderly, shame on them, and given a fixed penalty notice. At the same time, crowds gathered at Newgrange, located in the Boyne Valley in County Meath in Ireland, a 5,000-year-old tomb famous for the winter solstice illumination, which lights up the passage and chamber, if weather allows it. It is only viewed by a select group of people inside. Access to the chamber is limited, and it is decided by lottery each year. 12 lucky names were drawn from more than, wait for it, 30,000 people who applied for a ticket. The remainder were the six winners of a school's art competition for 10 to 13-year-olds, along with their guardians, of course. Unfortunately, heavy cloud cover meant that the sun failed to hit the spot this morning, and provided those gathered with an unforgettable experience, as in one where it didn't quite work. But despite this, the spokesman for the Office of Public Works, Claire Tuffy, said it was a great event. There was a lovely atmosphere and everyone was very excited just to be there. But unfortunately, there was no sun. Ah well, as the Maya say, it's not the end of the world. No, it really isn't the end of the world. Now, some archaeologists are suggesting a closer, more systematic look at how prehistoric people treated illness, injury and incapacity. Call it the archaeology of healthcare. The case that led Lorna Tilley and Mark Oxenham of the Australian National University in Canberra to this idea is that of a young man who died 4,000 years ago in what is now northern Vietnam and was buried along with others from his culture at a site known as Man Bac. Almost all the other skeletons at the site south of Hanoi and about 15 miles from the coast lie straight. However, Burial 9 was laid to rest in a fetal position. And when examined, it became clear that he had fused vertebra, wasted bones, and other evidence suggesting that he had been paralysed from the waist down before his adolescence, the result of a congenital disease known as Klippel-Feil syndrome. He had little, if any, use of his arms and could not have fed himself or even keep himself clean, but he lived for at least 10 years after contracting the illness. They concluded that the people around him took the time and care to tend to his every need. This case and other similar ones, if less extreme examples of disability, have prompted Tilley and Oxenham to ask what is the larger story and just what care for other people says about the culture that provided that care. How true. In fact, you don't really have to be civilised to be civilised. Now, wooden wells made from oak timbers dated to over 7,000 years ago have been discovered in eastern Germany, and their workmanship highlights a sophistication in carpentry skills for early Neolithic farming communities. The oak timbers, 151 in all, were preserved in a waterlogged environment and were dated to between 5,469 and 5,098 BCE calibrated. This early Neolithic craftsmanship now suggests that the first farmers were also the first carpenters. It challenges previous assumptions that metal tools are required to create complex wooden structures, such as these wells. Now you're saying, well, complex structure? Well, the newly discovered wooden wells were made using stone adzes of at least two different sizes to produce finely cut timbers and then employing wooden corner jointing and log construction through wedge tusk tenon joints and interlocked corner joints. The examination of tool marks also suggests the use of bone chisels in the process. The first Central European farmers journeyed from the Great Hungarian Plain around about 7,500 years ago, leaving behind settlement structures with longhouses, pottery called linear band keramik or linear pottery culture, LBK, and stone tools for archaeologists to uncover, though the excavations across the more fertile areas of present-day Europe, I should say, through the various locations in present-day Europe. Little remained of the longhouses other than their characteristic footprints in the soil, but the wells have survived intact after thousands of years in their underground waterlogged environments. Despite these finds, however, relatively little is known about these early settlers and the environment and technology, or even their culture. But the oak timbers analysed in the study preserve a record in the form of tree rings of the environment in which these people lived, holding the promise of reconstructing a picture of the world as it would have been for the early Neolithic settlers, and also what the natural resources would have been at their disposal. Now, 2 months ago, a brickyard worker in Baoshan in Yunnan province in the mountainous extreme southwest of China was clearing land with a bulldozer when he unearthed what looked like a green sword. What he'd actually stumbled upon was a huge burial site. Archaeologists working on the 2,500-year-old site have unearthed over 100 graves containing scores of bronze artefacts, including the 60-centimetre crescent sword. They've also found amber beads and even the traces of ancient clothing. The site is located in the Ailo Mountains. I know what you're going to say, you pronounced that wrong, Mr. Connolly, and you're probably right, and has been attributed to an ancient kingdom of the same name. You see what I did there, getting away with it. Little detail is known of these people, other than that they were largely pastoral society, comprised of several different ethnic groups centred around the New River in southwest Yunnan. Archaeologists are hoping that the dig will reveal more about the people and begin to explain how the kingdom interacted with the Han Chinese during the Warring State period. Now, a Bronze Age surprise. Oh, a metal detector unearthed a socketed bronze axe at North Cove near Beccles, northeast of London. Well, that's not a surprise, I hear you say, but wait till you hear what was inside it. 5 gold rings. No, I wasn't singing there. It really was 5 gold rings. Experts at London's British Museum say the hoard dates to between 1000 and 800 BCE. Dr. Andrew Brown, Suffolk County Council Archaeology Service, said that while Bronze Age axes were a fairly common find in Suffolk, the 5 gold rings were an altogether different matter. I think it's the first grouping of its kind, in fact, found in Suffolk. The North Cove find is the latest, in fact, of a long line of Bronze Age discoveries in the region. In June, a Bronze Age pot containing human remains was found in King's Lynn. In November 2011, pins and torques were found in Gorleston. And in June 2010, a Bronze Age field system, the first evidence of its kind, was also recorded. They're doing well. Now, at the top of an inner city hill in Glasgow, that's in Scotland, 17 stones form the first astronomically aligned circle to be built in Britain for nearly 3,000 years. Now, the future of this landmark could be in doubt as Glasgow prepares to make a bid for the Youth Olympics in 2018. But it's not exactly as it may seem. Duncan Lunan, the man who project managed the original develop, and no, he's not Neolithic, said in the proposal for Glasgow to host the 2018 Youth Olympics, this site will be flattened. It was in the late 1970s the National Job Creation Scheme offered £4 million to the city of Glasgow and its Parks Development Department on the condition that a series of special projects were created. Council put together a school astronomy competition, and the winning idea was to build a copy of an ancient site in one of the city's parks. On the 20th of March 1979, the stones, the heaviest weighing 4 tons, were set into the ground, and thousands of cheering children turned out to see it. But it looks like it's going to have to be flattened to except the Youth Olympics. There are now 3 petitions circulating to save the circle. And Duncan said, I would encourage the public, that means you, to sign the petition, write to the media, write to the council, and keep your eyes open for the events and try and support it. You can find further information about this remarkable stone circle at www.sighthillstonecircle.com. .net. Now, Sighthill is spelt S-I-G-H-T-H-I-L-L. So it's Sighthill Stone Circle, all one word, .net. So come on, surely this should be kept and incorporated into the scheme. You don't have to flatten it. Now, artefacts have been unearthed in northern Israel, and they're convinced that they have discovered the remains of an elite society with strong commercial ties with cultures as distant as Mesopotamia and Anatolia in current Turkey. The artefacts unearthed belong to the Chalcolithic period over 7 millennia ago and have been identified as part of the local Wadi Rabah culture. Among the artefacts are bowls containing hundreds of coloured flint beads, engraved earthenware and pallets decorated with ostriches, showing influences from Mesopotamia and Syria. The good news is that the archaeologists will continue excavating other sites at Ain Sapori, where we know they are going to find other periods like the pre-pottery Neolithic, dating back more than 10,000 years. So they're going to have a great time excavating that. I feel slightly jealous. Now, there's fury and a plan to move a Cornish ancient stone. The shifting of this ancient monument to make way for affordable housing in Cornwall has been condemned as a desecration. It's called the Tristan Stone on the road to Fowey. It's said to mark the grave of a Cornish king's nephew. However, now the obelisk is to be moved after Cornwall Council gave permission for an estate of 80 houses to be built on an adjacent site. The pillar, which is 2.7 metres high and set on a modern plinth, was formerly called the Long Stone Originally, it stood closer to Castle Door, 2 miles to the north. High on the back of the stone is a Tau cross carved in relief, and on the front, running vertically down the stone, is a two-line inscription interpreted as Drustanos hic lecet Cunamori filius. Drustanos lies here, son of Cunamoris. It's been dated, provisionally, to the 6th century CE. The Tristan stone is reputedly marking the grave of Tristan, nephew of King Mark of Cornwall, and a young nobleman whose forbidden love for the fair Isolde has inspired poets for centuries. Now, Dr. Oliver Padell said that this monument could be a converted standing stone from a much earlier time, but he added, in fact, there's no definite link between the stone and Tristan. Cornwall Council gave the permission for a park and ride and 80 houses to be built on the site. Concerns had been raised about the impact of the development on the setting of the ancient monument, and as a result, the committee narrowly voted to move it for what is thought to be the fourth time in 2 centuries. Bert Biscoe, Cornwall Council portfolio holder for transportation, highways and the environment, condemned the decision as an infringement of the cultural integrity of Cornwall. The move to a nearby location was in fact supported by English Heritage, and a spokesman for the organisation said, "We did object to the proposed park and ride scheme initially because it would affect the setting of the significant scheduled monument. However, as it has already been moved 3 times in the past, well, they felt that it could be moved again to a nearby setting, which would continue to preserve its character." Yes. What do you think about that one, actually? Listen to that. There's a question for you to mull over while you're having your Christmas dinner or recovering from it. Does the actual standing stone carry its meaning around with it? Or is it, if it's moved, does it lose something? It's not in its right place to start with. It's an interesting discussion to have. Now, things that are definitely not going to move around but cause much discussion, the Nazca Lines. The first findings of the most detailed study yet by the two British archaeologists into the Nazca Lines, which are enigmatic drawings created between 2100 and 1300 years ago in the Peruvian desert, have been published in the latest issue of the journal Antiquity. As part of a 5-year investigation, Professor Clive Ruggles of the University of Leicester School of Archaeology and Ancient History and Dr. Nicholas Saunders of the University of Bristol's Department of Archaeology and Anthropology have walked 1,500 kilometres tracing the lines and geometric figures created by the Nazca people between 100 BCE and 700 CE. Ruggles and Saunders combined the experience and knowledge gained by walking the lines with scientific data obtained from satellite digital mapping, studying where designs are superimposed, and examining the associated pottery. The result is the most detailed study of the site to date. In the midst of their study area is in fact a unique labyrinth originally discovered by Ruggles in 1984. The labyrinth is completely hidden in the landscape, which is flat and virtually featureless. As you walk it, only the path stretching ahead of you is visible at any given point. Similarly, if you map it from the air, its form makes no sense at all. But if you walk it, discovering it as you go, you have a set of experiences that in many respects would have been the same for anyone walking it in the past. Sharing some of these experiences by walking the lines is an important source of information that complements the hard scientific and archaeological evidence and can really aid our attempts of making sense of the monument itself. Segments of nearly all of the Nazca lines and figures, including the labyrinth, have been washed away by flash floods that occur from time to time. Ruggles and Saunders have studied the integrity of many lines and figures within their 80 square kilometre study area. The pristine state and well-preserved edges of the labyrinth suggest it was never walked by more than a few people in single file. That's actually an interesting concept where it's worth doing that on many sites, actually experience it and walking the site as if you're doing it in the past. It'll make a bit more sense of a place. Now, several years ago, some of the earliest evidence of human activity in the Americas was found in 8 caves on the outskirts of Paisley, 220 miles southeast of Eugene in northwest USA. Organic material at the site dated to about 1,400 years ago. 14,000 years ago, And material in the strata just above it was to 13,000 to 13,200 years ago, making it the oldest site in Oregon and the oldest containing western stemmed points. From the dating, it appears to be impossible to derive western stem points from a proto-Clovis tradition, so said Dennis Jenkins of the University of Oregon. It suggests that we may have here in the western United States a tradition that is at least as old as Clovis, and quite possibly older. We seem to have two different traditions coexisting in the United States that did not blend for a period of hundreds of years. Michael Hofreiter, a biologist in DNA laboratory at the University of York in the UK, said that the results of this study are exciting because they show that the hypothesis that the Clovis people were the first Native Americans, which has been a prevailing idea for the last decades, is wrong. Now researchers need to come up with a new model for the settling of the Americas. And on that bombshell, it just goes for me to wish you all, yes, you, yes, you, Gary, and Jeff, and Liz, and Michelle, and Lorraine, and Frank, and Stu, and Dory, and, well, all of you. There's actually thousands to thank, so we'd be here for a while. So just thank you to all of you for sticking with us during 2012. A very, very happy Christmas and New Year to you all on behalf of Diego and his news editors at Stone Pages, from Dave Horrocks, the technical wizard who makes us all sound so good, and from myself, who hopefully helps you enjoy archaeology news with a wry comment here and there, as well as some beautiful mispronunciations along the way. So remember, stay up to date with Past Horizons, that's www.pasthorizonspr.com, and of course Stone Pages, which you'll find at news.stonepages.com. And we will see you again, I hope, in 2013. So, all the best from all of us here to all of you. Happy Christmas.